Let's turn the attention to golf here now, Pat, as we do each and every week, of course. In this segment, we will go inside the ropes.
For a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week, let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number one, PGA Tour. Testing for drugs under the anti-doping policy began last year at the AT&T National here in Washington, up in Washington, D.C. That is the week that we're in right now. It is AT&T National Week, hosted by Tiger Woods. So 1 year now in the books, more than 1,000 random samples later, Tim Fincham, commissioner of the PGA Tour, says that there have been no positive tests for performance-enhancing drugs. Fincham declined to say, however, if anyone had tested positive for recreational drugs, such as marijuana. Fincham said that the IOC observed the Tour's drug testing procedures earlier this year, and they were impressed. Quote, I think when you're dealing with hundreds of athletes and things can get in your body, we may very well have problems down the road, but at this point, no one has tested positive, end quote. Pat, good news for the PGA Tour, obviously, that through year one, they have not had any positive tests. The antithesis of what's going on in Major League Baseball. But do you think we'll ever see a performance-enhancing drug problem on tour?
I don't know if we're going to see a problem. I am shocked, though, Russ, that out of what you said, 1,000 samples, not one of them came back. I mean, you just had a guy, Jeremy Mayfield, in NASCAR, who's been fighting for the last, you know, several months, this problem that he's had with, and now he said he took Claritin D or something. And I don't know what golf is testing for, if they're testing for those types of things that, you know, might show up as a quote, which are, they're drugs, but, you know, guys might have a reason for taking them. But anyway, I am absolutely shocked that out of 1,000 samples, nobody came back for something. I mean, it's just, you know, logical that somebody's going to be taking something that they think is okay, and it ends up violating the drug policy. So in a weird way, you know, that you know, may have a red flag with me, may shoot up a red flag, because you would just think out of 1,000 samples, somebody would have come back positive for something. But with that said, I think that's good news for the PGA Tour. I think at some point somebody will, and we've talked about this before, that somebody's in golf, you know, if you can recover from injuries faster, which everybody has, back, knee, wrist, something going on because of the golf swing, if you can take something that's going to help you recover from that faster, I think guys, again, because the money's so good, that they're gonna try and get away with something, or think they're gonna put something over on the system. And then, you know, again, as we've talked about, if something's gonna make you a little bit stronger in terms of being able to hit the ball farther, and if you're hitting an 8-iron instead of a 5-iron into a hole, I think, again, your odds of hitting it closer to the hole, and again, making more money because you're shooting lower, there're gonna be temptations for guys to do that. So I think at some point, Russ, you are going to see a violation, and it's either going to be the mistaken idea of a guy taking something that you didn't think would be on the list, or it'll be a guy thinking he needed to take something to recover from injury or to make him stronger, quote-unquote, to hit the ball farther.
All right, Pat, I agree with you. I don't know that we'll ever see a problem, but I think it's inevitable that at some point, you know, obviously all the players on the PGA Tour right now are dotting their I's and crossing their T's. They're minding their P's and Q's. Any other alphabetic things I can throw in there? They're watching what they're taking drug-wise in their body. But, you know, I'm sure a couple years from now that this new drug policy isn't as fresh in their minds, they'll probably get lax, and something will slip by, and they'll take something on accident, or they'll take something on purpose, and they'll get caught. All right, topic number two, PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham. He had a busy week, a lot of stuff going on this week in D.C. On Tuesday, he made it clear that the PGA Tour will go along with the new groove rule implementation on irons and wedges next year. The USGA and the Royal and Ancient Golf Club announced last year that effective January 1st, 2010, the dimension in grooves, all the way from 5 irons through wedges, would change to create less spin when the ball was struck. Fincham was under increasing pressure from players and some equipment companies to postpone by 1 year the new rule, allowing for more research in what will become the first rollback in golf equipment since World War II. So, Pat, it is now official. All the governing bodies in golf are on the same page as we head to 2010. And how much different do you think the game will be next year with these new groove rule changes?
Well, I think it's a good thing, Russ. Number one, I understand. You know, we're always trying to deal with technology, and sure, it hits the ball further with certain drivers, and the ball itself has become, you know, so much different than what it was just 20 years ago. You're getting a lot more control and distance with the same ball, which you never were able to do before. But this case with the grooves, I agree with the commissioner, and I agree with USGA and R&A on this one. You and I both, Russ, will watch tournaments, and guys are in not real heavy rough, but they're in the first or maybe even second cut of rough, and they're hitting, you know, like a 6-iron out of that, and they're hitting it. It hits on the green and stops after one bounce, and that's not what golf is meant to do. It's supposed to be a penalty when you're in the rough, and part of that penalty is that you don't get the spin on the ball because you're not getting a clean hit on the ball. From, you know, there's grass that's going to be contacting the ball in your club face, and that's supposed to take the spin off, so when you hit it on the green, it doesn't have that bite. It bounces through the green, so you have to be able to, you know, as a player and you know, with your talent, be able to judge, all right, I have to hit it in front of the green or whatever and let it roll on. And gauging that, and that's part of, you know, being in that penalty situation that you didn't hit the fairway. So I'm for doing something with the grooves to eliminate that, you know, where the pros are able to still get spin on the ball coming out of the rough. So I think this is a good thing, even though, like you said, it's the first kind of rollback that we've done since World War II. But the time has come for this. Golf should be about, you know, hitting the ball in the fairway and then getting rewarded for doing that by being able to spin the ball when you get it on the green. If you hit it in the rough, there should be some kind of penalty for that.
I totally agree with you, Pat. I think this is good for golf. I think the biggest thing we'll see next year are all the stipulations in this ruling, because really the PGA Tour, all the highest level of golf are really the only players that will be affected immediately by this, and then it'll be kind of a slow trickle-down effect where all the other golfers, amateurs included, you know, follow suit years later. Players have voiced concern about the lack of ability to test the new grooves in tour course conditions, and they're going to start having to do it now. In the next 6 months, players will have to do their due diligence, get the new V-groove wedges, and start maybe not playing with them in tournaments, but playing with them in practice rounds, perhaps. The condition of competition was set to apply to elite professional tours in 2010, as I was just mentioning, but USGA and R&A amateur events won't have to conform until 2014, while allowing all pre-2010 groove clubs to be conforming for recreational players through 2024. So we're seeing like three levels here. We're seeing the elite pros, it takes effect next year. We're seeing amateur events at the highest level, USGA and R&A 2014. And then we're seeing guys like us, recreational players, we're not going to have to worry about until 2024. Deadlines for manufacturers are spread out as well. In simplest terms, a manufacturer can make wedges and irons with the pre-2010 grooves through the... Now, this is interesting. Manufacturers can make the wedges with the U-grooves, pre-2010 policies, through the end of this year. Make as many as they can, and then take all of next year, 2010, to assemble and distribute those clubs. Wedge and iron head manufacturers... wedges and iron heads manufactured after January 1st, 2010 must have the new groove configuration. Hope you got all of that, Pat. Doesn't it seem like there's a lot of stipulations with this whole process?
Yeah, I think they're going through too many machinations there, Russ. I mean, yeah, have a little bit of a layering effect, like you said, you know, pros next year and then top amateurs 2 years from now and then everybody like within 5 years, but allowing it to go out 14 years or whatever it is, I think it's just too much. I mean, make the change and have everybody, you know, conform to it. You know, it's like Arnold Palmer, you know, a few years ago, one of the things I completely disagreed with the King on, he said, you know, when they were talking about that trampoline effect with drivers, that, hey, amateurs should be allowed to play with these clubs because they give them, you know, more fun to play with. I disagree with him. Then, you know, we need to have two sets of rules for everybody. And golf should be a fairly uniform sport. Everybody should be playing somewhat the same type of equipment because that's how you gauge how good you are. If certain people are using different things, then I don't know if that gives you a true reading on, you know, how you're doing in comparison to other people playing the sport. So I think the better to get everybody conformed faster, but I guess the USGA and whoever knows what they're doing more than I do.
Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic. It's our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment we do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number three, more bad news for the LPGA Tour. The Jamie Farr Owens Corning Classic may be the next tournament to go by the wayside, being played for the 25th time this weekend and possibly the last. The Farr's $1.4 million purse is among the smallest on the LPGA Tour. Tough economic times have led tournament officials to pare $500,000 from this year's already bare-bones budget. The contract with the title sponsor expires after this week. The LPGA had 34 events last year, and that number is falling. Now 5, 6, 7 tournaments are not returning in 2010. Organizers of the two-year-old Kapalua LPGA Classic in Hawaii announced just this Tuesday that financial problems would cause them to pull out of the last 4 years of their contract with the tour. The Corning Classic in Corning, New York ended in May after 31 years when its title sponsor called it quits. The Michelob Ultra Open in Williamsburg, Virginia is also uncertain as far as its future. The LPGA here in Florida, no longer. Three events are gone, one in Miami, one in West Palm, and one in Orlando. No longer on the schedule this year. Add to all these tournaments leaving the debacle of the English-only situation earlier this year. And Pat, I ask you this. Might Carolyn Bivens not be the right person to run the LPGA Tour?
That's an excellent question, Russ. Anytime you have trouble or problems with things, as well as if something's going along really well, then you usually look to the top. Who's leading things, and what kind of a job are they doing? How did they get them to the top? Or conversely, you know, because of all the problems, what are they doing to counteract those problems? In this case, I'm not completely absolving Carolyn Bivens because, you know, she is, you know, you do look to the leader whenever there's problems. But in this case, I think the economy is in such a state of shambles that it is affecting a lot of the corporations and their abilities to sponsor these events. You just mentioned several long-standing tournaments that are pulling out. Corning just is shocking to me. They've been around forever, and there's been other ups and downs in the economy in the 30-plus years that they've been involved with that tournament. And this is the year they decide to pull out. So it goes to show you that maybe we're, you know, almost worse off than we thought we were when an organization like Corning is pulling out of a golf tournament that they sponsor for that long. You mentioned the Kapalua LPGA. They've still got 4 years left on a contract. It's not like they've come to the end of the contract and they're just deciding not to renew. They understand that there's going to be legal ramifications for them pulling out of this contract 4 years early, and they don't care, or they're willing to face those. So, you know, and you talk about Williamsburg, too, another one with Michelob that's been around for a long time. I actually thought we'd see this with the Champions Tour before we'd see this with the LPGA Tour in terms of, you know, people kind of realizing that the product that they're promoting is really not that great. But the LPGA Tour does have some good young players that you would think would be marketable and would have some buzz with them. But I guess, you know, it's just not coming to the fro, so to speak, or you know, I don't know what to do about it, Russ, but it's a bad problem. Not that there's good problems, but this is an issue that the LPGA, if they don't recognize things, here's what I'll tell you. Carolyn Bivens needs to come out of this year with something positive. She needs to have some kind of a collaboration with the players, the media, with the sponsors she has left, and come out of this year with a game plan going forward for next year and in 5 years and in 10 years, something to show that the LPGA has some stability. Because if she doesn't, Russ, I think I'm not going to blame her for this right now, but she needs to come up with a plan, because if she doesn't, I think the LPGA is in real, real trouble in terms of, you know, just being reduced to a bare bones, like U.S. Women's Open, you know, maybe like 5 or 10 tournaments if something isn't done relatively soon, because they're losing some long-term sponsors very quickly, and that's not a good thing.
Well, Pat, I think I'm going to be a little more harsh on Carolyn Bivens than you were. I do think I blame her a little more than you do. Obviously, the economy is bad right now, but Carolyn Bivens made the decision. Not only did they not lower prices for sponsors this year, they raised some prices in certain situations. That was the main problem with ADT and Trump International here locally in West Palm Beach. And then you couple that with the idea that Carolyn Bivens had this crazy English-only idea that didn't go anywhere with the players, and she had to retract it, even though I think we both agreed that it was a good idea, but it was just a bad way of trying to implement it. Dottie Pepper came out a few months ago and blasted a lot of Bivens' policies on the LPGA Tour. Bivens was encouraging players to Twitter during rounds, and then she had most of her membership come out, including Paula Kramer, and say that that's ridiculous and no one should be twittering during a round of golf. And then we realized that the LPGA Tour schedule is laughable. It took till the sixth week this year, or the sixth tournament, not the sixth week, sixth tournament, which was March, before the tour even made it to the U.S. mainland. They started in Brazil, then they went to Hawaii, then they went to Thailand, then they went to Singapore, then they had the MasterCard Classic in Mexico, and then it wasn't till middle of March when they had the Golf Phoenix LPGA International presented by Mirasol Winery in Phoenix, Arizona. So I just think there's a lot of things that the LPGA Tour has done the last few years that make me scratch my head, and I think a lot of those decisions are a big reason why they're in dire straits right now. And I'm gonna blame Carolyn Bivens a little more than you are. And that does it for Inside the Ropes, Pat. We're going to have to couch topic number four because we've run out of time, as we do each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf. And it's brought to you by PGA National Resort and Spa. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Safe travels to you, Pat. We'll see you back here locally during the week.
I'll be back next week. Thanks, Russ.
All right, there he is, Patrick Rooney Jr., my esteemed co-host, joining us live from the Jersey Shore.